What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No! Oh my God, how could he do that?
What?
Charles Darwin.
The nerves is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brever, and alongside me is Logan Camden. And today, we're back talking NBA for the first time in a minute. I was out last week, and then earlier in the week, we did a March Madness NBA Draft Prospect Pod that you guys should check out if you haven't already, but there's lots of good juicy stuff about the association itself to get to. So today we're going to do just that as we enter the real home stretch of the regular season here. And one of the trends that has started to develop, Logan, is that the Sixers have been coming on very strong. I mean, have the best record in the league for like more than 2/3 of the season now after a slow start. But especially, they've been catching fire. The Celtics have come down to earth a bit as the Bucks have grabbed that one seed by a couple games. Boston 5-5 in their last 10. Philly 9-1 in their last 10. Only a half game separates those two, with Boston still having the advantage there. So, Logan, based on what we've seen now for this extended stretch, do you view Philly as a stronger contender than Boston?
It seems like we're getting there, and I took the bait, hook, line, and sinker last year, Carson. I was all in on the Philadelphia 76ers, and that was something that was very hard to do for something that we've touched on very often here on Nerd Sesh periodically throughout NBA seasons, and that is the fact that you're effectively having to bet on Joel Embiid and James Harden to get you through the playoffs. Embiid has struggled with his injuries, staying on the court throughout the playoffs, and James Harden every year seems to just come back to earth. Even below earth seems to crumble as the playoffs come along. Both of these guys very heavily dependent on free throws as well for the majority of their scoring. But the Sixers have been damn good. Number 2 offense, number 7 defense over these last 15 games. And they have a very talented... I mean, at the start of the year, again, for context, man, it's not a talent issue. At the start of the season, I said the Sixers had the most talented top 4 in basketball, and I still think I fundamentally believe that. You add in a glue guy like PJ Tucker, this team is legit. They play hard defense. They have a defensive anchor in Joel Embiid. They've got guys who play hard, and it seems like everything's clicking. And again, the big thing here is that you can count on Tyrese Maxey. Tobias Harris may be wildly overpaid, but you can still count on him to put up points for you in the playoffs, so the weight is not solely on the shoulders of Embiid and Harden this year's playoffs. I'm not going to bet on them, though. And it's hard to say that, too, because Boston has been in such turmoil these past 15 games, man, struggling to close out games. Close loss to Utah, close loss to Cleveland, close loss to New York. They get beat down by Brooklyn after taking, I think, a 12-point lead in that game. Another loss to New York, a loss to the Rockets. They have not been solid over these last 15 games, and I think a couple bigger issues involved in that Jaylen Brown seems like he's frustrated, right? His comments are weird, right? To the media, talking about, I'm only here as long as they want me here. The KD trade rumor seems like they've gotten to him. Boston seems like they're not fully committed to him. There's something there. And the bigger issue on court is Jason Tatum is not playing like the superstar we need him to play like. Jason Tatum, and this has been the issue, we touched on this, I feel like 2 years ago, Carson, we touched on this a year ago, Jason Tatum's reliance on, and just settling for perimeter stuff, it's frustrating. Jason Tatum has the skill set and the ability to be one of the best three-level scorers in basketball. Flat out, he is one of the best three-level scorers in basketball when he's playing like that. He's unstoppable. He's a long wing with a beautiful shot. He's one of the best tough shot makers in basketball, and yet, in close moments, in late games, when you need him to get downhill and get this offense into motion, we saw this in the finals last year against Golden State. And it seemed like he had crossed that threshold, that last season, that he had finally figured it out, that to be this top-flight superstar, you need to be effective from all levels of the court. And in this recent stretch, he's been just passive in settling for all this perimeter stuff. We need Jason Tatum to be a downhill force, to be the fully well-rounded superstar that he is. Jason Tatum is that guy, and he hasn't been playing like that. So I think the consensus, I think the logical opinion after seeing this over this recent stretch is that Philly's a better contender than Boston because they've looked better than Boston. I'm never going to go there. I still believe in Boston's depth. I believe in this team. Al Horford's been playing his ass off. I love this team top to bottom, and I don't know, man. What I've seen on the court does not reflect what my take should be. My take should be that the Sixers are a better team than Boston, that we should bet on them through the playoffs. I've said this a million times on the podcast. I'm going to say it again. I can never bet on Philly because they've burnt me too many times in the past, but Boston has not looked good either. At this point in time, I'd still put Boston over Philly, but it's purely a bias standpoint. What we've seen on the court reflects that Philly's the better team.
Interesting. I think that Boston's overall body of work this season, to me, still means a lot. And the talent on this roster, top to bottom, still means a lot. Philly's top four, I think, is the best in the league. Embiid is one of the greatest scoring big men that we have ever seen. Like, if you are talking about a 280-plus pound man with the level of ball handling, pull-up jump shooting ability that he has, how he's been maximized as a pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop threat with James Harden, he's an absolute monster. And a lot of people believe he's the MVP. I don't feel that way right now. It's not Jokic, though, I think is the MVP, which I know will be everybody's assumption. I would actually lean Giannis right now. But Embiid is playing at the level of a top-five guy. And if he can sustain that, with James Harden playing at a clear All-NBA level, with this uber-efficient scoring, with this up-there-for-best-in-the-league level playmaking, and if Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey can be these incredible mismatch-attacking tertiary and fourth options, really up there for the best in the league in that category in terms of pure scoring ability, and the Sixers team is one of the best shooting teams in the league all around, actually now the most efficient from beyond the arc in the league, with improved role players, your PJ Tuckers, DeAnthony Meltons, I think that Milton, Jalen McDaniels as 7-8 guys are fine. There is definitely a world in which it's like this team looks almost unstoppable. But I do still think the advantage that Philly has in that 1-4 spot is surpassed by Boston's advantage in the 5-8. And that's just what I love about this Boston team so much, is that last year they felt more singularly dependent on Tatum and Brown being great. And that was necessary every night offensively, and they had to be like the best defense in the league to be that truly elite team. This year, it does feel like they're way more capable of having Derek White come out and have a 20-10 game very efficiently where he defends his ass off, or Malcolm Brogdon doing the same thing, or Grant Williams having a big shooting and defensive night. It's just their supporting cast is so strong and so well-rounded. Man, you hate Grant Williams. Why do you hate Grant Williams?
I used to love Grant Williams. I mean, dude, just like he shit two games away for Boston. The free throw thing, and then he missed another clutch jumper. Like, Grant's a good role player, man. Shout out Grant, but
he is a good role player.
I'm just mad that he threw those two games away.
Well, he is one of the biggest three-point shooting games in playoff history. How many did he make? 10? Last year, vintage Grant Williams performance. bottom line is I do still like that depth element, that number of difference makers for Boston. So because of that, because I do still like them more defensively, I feel that Philly's going to have a bit of a challenge matching up with them on the wings, right? Like, they are much better equipped to guard Harden and Maxey with some combination of White and Smart and Jaylen Brown and Malcolm Brogdon than Philly is to guard Brown and Tatum with, like, I mean, Harrison Tucker isn't bad, but it's not as good. And then you consider Joel Embiid has struggled more facing Al Horford in his career than probably anybody else. I have his career numbers up here and head-to-head with Horford. 24 a night still, but 43% from the field, 23% from deep. And so when you consider how imposing Horford can be as a one-on-one defender, and then when you consider the fact that, oh, he's going to laugh again, you can throw in spots other big bodies like Grant Williams at Embiid and have other guys helping aggressively. They have the kind of athletes and length to make it more difficult for Embiid to read doubles, for him to get those passes out quickly. They can close those gaps to shooters more effectively. I just think Boston is still a more complete team. And if Tatum and Brown play up to their potential, this supporting cast is just better than Philly's. Philly's supporting cast is good. This supporting cast is great. And so I'm going to lean on that. And I still do have a bit more faith in Boston. And it's difficult to ignore the playoff track record with Harden and Embiid. But at the same time, it's like, are they going to really not live up to expectations again this year? Because Harden is less reliant on the free throw shooting than ever before.
Yeah.
You think they are? Embiid is just a different beast. And by the way, is a shot maker of a different caliber than what we've ever seen from him, right? Previously, he's hovered around 48, 49% from the field. This year, he's up at 55%. He's making 58% of his twos. He is just so brutally effective from the mid-range. 50% there, dominant at the rim, making his threes at a 35% clip this year. I understand that his body could still break down, but this is also the healthiest that he's ever been. So I don't even really view that as much as a concern for Philly. Obviously, those guys have something to prove, but I have faith in them. It's just, I think Boston's better top to bottom still.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think I have more faith in Embiid than I do a guy like Harden. I mean, Harden's last two games. And again, you know, I hate cherry picking these things. Harden's had a great season. He is all NBA this season. I think if you don't have him on your team, I think you're foolish. Harden has still been every bit as that. He's been a great playmaker all year long. This is one of the best, like, pure facilitating versions of Harden I think we've ever seen. But to ignore that he can disappear night to night, I think is foolish. His past two games, 4-15 versus Charlotte, 0-6 from deep. Against Chicago, 2-14 from the field, 0-6 from deep. It's hard not to let those things get to you as a fan and as a person who has bet on Harden before in the past, that he can, at the drop of a hat, and again, these aren't big spots, these aren't big games, but at a randomness point, he disappears. And I am more likely to bet on Harden disappearing and being sub 20 points per game in the playoffs. I'm closer to him being sub 20 points a night in the playoffs than I am 22 a night efficiently.
Really?
Harden has shown me who he is. And until he shows me that he can be a different player, and this is a different player, right? This is not the same takeover scoring machine that would, you know, pure isolation can just kill you at every spot on the court. This is a different guy. And he's got a lot more help. But Harden's shown me who he is. And Embiid, I think this is the best Embiid we've ever seen. They've burnt me too many times, man. It's that ex-girlfriend that keeps calling, man. You showed me your true colors. You know what I mean? Like, I know who you are. And Philly's that ex-girlfriend. I know who you are. So Philly's burnt me, man. And I'm not going to bet on him. I do agree with you. I think Boston's deeper top to bottom. I think that Tatum and Brown, it's easier for the Celtics to have an off night from their stars and recover because of the depth that they have than it is for Philly. In that being said, I think that Milwaukee reigns supreme, and I think that Tatum and Brown are going to have to play their asses off to get through the East, especially Jason Tatum, man. We're going to have to see a different beast come playoff time. Neither of these teams I would bet on to get out of the East right now, but I give the slim margin, like you said, to Boston over Philly at this point because of depth and because Philly's cooking.
You really have been damaged by the Philadelphia 76ers. I think that that's something
man.
we should really unpack at some point. I understand the concerns with Harden. I do. What I will say is, previously, I think we've seen him take a dip in terms of efficiency and production in the playoffs for a few reasons. Number one, free throw reliance, right? You're not going to get the same ticky-tack manipulating officials, hooking defenders, calls quite as much in the playoffs. We've seen his free throw average go down by about one per game, which is a legitimate difference in the playoffs. We've seen his three-point shot leave him at times, which I think is due to a couple things. One being fatigue from a heavy load that he's had to carry in the regular seasons. Not the case this year. Same with the free throw reliance. It's the lowest it's ever been this year. And then another reason I think we see him struggle is because he is a relatively predictable star, that he doesn't have that level of versatility, that he's going to pound the ball between the legs and go to a step back, or he's going to get into the lane and draw a foul, take a layup, put up his floater, right? But I do feel like this year, although he is more reliant on that three ball, or as reliant as he's ever been, and part of the reason he's had a really hard time scoring the last couple games is because he hasn't made a three. And it's like, yeah, he does need that with the little bit of loss of rim pressuring that he's had with age. But he has been relatively versatile this year, and like the most versatile we've ever seen James Harden be, having his best mid-range season, both in terms of volume and efficiency. So this is the most faith I have in him, given that he doesn't have that same load, that he's not as reliant on the getting to the line, and that he has shown a bit more versatility in terms of his scoring, and that he's been so great as a playmaker that that's really his primary value. Because both games, right, we've seen him suck, but Tyrese Maxey's gone out there and gotten his 20, and he's going to need to do more than that to compensate for Harden having a complete off night. But there's just so much talent here. I feel like they could survive the off Harden night with his playmaking and with Embiid being at the level he is in the supporting cast. I still slightly favor Boston, but again, it's not really coming down to a lack of faith in the top Philly guys, despite the reputation that they've earned themselves. Harden more for legitimate letdowns, Embiid more for some unfortunate injury luck, although he also has not played up to expectations. Let's talk about a potentially still premier contender out west that has not been up to that level this year. They're in the sixth seed now. They're a couple games above 500. They've been fun, but the Golden State Warriors still do not have Andrew Wiggins, who is on leave due to personal reasons that have not been publicly announced. And I will say that I think the public has handled this very poorly. People have started some rather insidious rumors, I think, and it's just not a spot that anybody should be speculating in. But regardless, the reality is we don't know if or when Andrew Wiggins is coming back to play basketball. So working within that reality, Logan, can the Warriors contend without Andrew Wiggins?
To put it simply, no, they cannot. No, I think that if Andrew Wiggins is not out there on the court, I don't think the Warriors have a chance of getting out of the West. The West is open. There's a lot of very good teams. That being said, the Warriors need him, point blank. I know that these numbers have been, talked about a myriad of times everywhere. 29-7 at home. They're 9-29 on the road. They have a defensive rating of basically 110 at home. They have a defensive rating of 121.4 on the road. That's absolutely abysmal, and you see it night to night. I mean, it's honestly puzzling. I mean, it makes me really scratch my head, especially like you watch this this Mavericks game that they just played, and it's Steph is going to sleep, leaving guys wide open in the corner. Guys just look disengaged. It just seems different from these Warrior teams in the past that are so locked in. That's what made them different, right? It's not, Carson, I think you made such a good point on Twitter the other day at Suns fans talking about how the Warriors don't have a great downhill collapser, and yet they've still been able to get through the playoffs. They've still been able to put up a ton of points. That's their identity, right? You have two of the greatest shooters of all time. You've got a dynamic creator off the bench in Jordan Poole. You've got the guy that makes everything go in Draymond Green. And it's worked, that they've been able to shoot their way against teams through the playoffs and overwhelm them with that. But what comes with that is you have to be engaged on the other end of the floor at an all-time level, because you're going to miss threes. That's going to allow the other team to get out in transition. And the Warriors have just been getting killed like that on the road, and I can't explain it other than disengagement. And it's possession to possession where guys are just Like, and I get it. Like, you need to help against guys like Luka. You know, Curry's sitting over there on the help side trying to make sure that he can poke a ball loose or something. But you're leaving a great shooter wide open in the corner, and I just don't see that night to night, especially on the road. I don't see that same level of engagement that we have from Warriors teams in the past, and I think a guy like Andrew Wiggins really would help out. He's a great defender. He's a great glue guy. He's a great rebounder. He is a guy who can get downhill and attack closeouts. He's a good shooter when he's on the court. Yes, they need Andrew Wiggins. Now, I want to give one guy his flowers who I thought has been performing really well of late. I have liked what I've seen from this bench, from Dante DiVincenzo's been balling his ass off everywhere on the court. The Ty Jeromes of the world, Anthony Lamb's been given good minutes. I think Jonathan Kuminga has been playing great these last 10 games, man. 16-5-2 on 62-50-70 splits, adding great defense. I think he's got a true shooting percentage of like 68 in these last two games, which speaks volumes about Kuminga. He's been locked in transition. He is a menace, man, when they get him the ball and finishing stuff on the fast break. Kuminga's been playing great, and I think he's a guy that you put him in that Wiggins role, he could succeed a little bit, but there's levels to this, and there's a consistency element to it. Kuminga's been doing it for 10 games. Wiggins did it all of last season and was imperative in the finals, was imperative at hustle plays during the playoffs to get this team through. I like what I've seen from Kuminga. I like what I've seen from this bench. But the bottom line is that without Andrew Wiggins, the Golden State Warriors stand no chance at winning the title and stand no chance at getting out of the West. They desperately need him to be back on the floor to have a chance at winning a title.
I agree with you completely. Andrew Wiggins was, I would say, the second best player for the Warriors in their title run throughout the playoffs last year. He was an outstanding perimeter defender. He was an excellent positional rebounder, and he was the most effective mismatch attacker who they had, a guy who could go out there, get his own bucket, if it's a mid-range pull-up, if it's getting to the rim, could knock down catch-and-shoot jumpers pretty effectively, and that versatility, that all-around impact was essential. There's no chance without him, because the Warriors last year, to win the title, first of all, had to have an easier path than whatever they're going to face this year, and that's not to say it wasn't legitimate, but the league is just better this year. You might have to face the Suns with Kevin Durant in the West, and whoever's coming out of the East is just better. And obviously Denver's a completely different beast than last year. So you have to factor that in. And then you have to consider that for the Warriors to win the title last year, a lot of guys had to play exceptionally well. Jordan Poole was 17 a night on 51-39-92 splits in the playoffs. I mean, he was dynamic for a majority of the time. Not to mention the fact that they had really good veteran role players like Otto Porter Jr., Gary Payton II. GP2, it looks like, is going to be coming back soon. We'll see how he comes back from injury. Steph obviously had to be phenomenal. And so there is no chance if they lose the guy who was their second best player, who people were talking about as one of the premier wing defenders in the world, who people were talking about as maybe a fringe top 30 kind of player because of his value to winning in all the different things that he did for this basketball team on both ends of the floor. There is no title ceiling. There is no chance. And I love DiVincenzo and I love Kuminga, but the Warriors are at a talent deficit. They're at an athleticism deficit without Andrew Wiggins. They're losing offensive skill. They're losing a premier defender. And they have to be great defensively, right? Like, they were able to give Jason Tatum fits. That's a huge reason they won the title. Yes, they had this dynamic offense led by Steph, but their defense was the foundation throughout the regular season last year and throughout the playoffs. And you don't have that with Andrew Wiggins. They're defending better. They have been, like, since the All-Star break, but it's not enough. And the road stuff is shocking, and it's weird, and it's strange that it's persisted this late in the season. I don't know how much of an issue it is for the playoffs, but it's real right now. But that doesn't even matter if you don't have Andrew Wiggins. So I really think it's pretty simple. This is a team that has scrapped to be around 500 with or without Steph Curry this year. And without Andrew Wiggins, there's just no chance, man. So I really hope that everything is okay and that he's able to do whatever is best for him. And hopefully for the sake of the NBA and Warriors fans, he is able to come back at some point this season. But without him, there's no truly meaningful series. They can go out there, they can win a playoff series. They can have a great shooting series. Steph, Clay, Poole go crazy, but they don't have the defensive ceiling. They don't have the athleticism, the size, in my opinion, than to truly contend.
I completely agree, and I don't want to spend too long on this, but, you know, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I think that if you had told Warriors front office people, you know, that this is how the season would have gone, I think you're probably moving on from a guy like Moses Moody, and you're moving on from a guy like James Wiseman at the start of the year, you know, before Wiseman loses value and you move off of him for effectively, you know, a second-round pick and Gary Payton the second. And, you know, I think you're moving on from Moody because he's proven that you can't even really, you know, give him rotational minutes at this point. I think they would have made that decision, and it's tough. You know, you would have gone out and got more win-now assets. It sucks. They need Wiggins. They've needed – and what makes this even worse is that all season long, Carson, I've been talking, you know, about their one biggest need, and that's another big wing to play defense, another guy that's just – big, physical, can lock guys up, can rebound, is, you know, impactful in, you know, in the arc, in the paint. And I'm not even talking about like a real dominant guy. And shout out Kuminga for filling this role and for playing his ass off these last 10 games. But they've been short that guy, it feels like, all season long. And so it just makes it worse that their biggest need, they lose, again, arguably their second most important piece, like you said. Yeah. If they don't have Wiggins come playoff time, I don't even know if I pick them to get out of the first round. That's how dire this is.
Yeah. We don't know what matchup they'll draw. I mean, it looks like they're in that sixth spot, Memphis and Sacramento fighting for the 2-3 seed. It would probably be one of those teams. They could definitely still beat either of those teams. They're both flawed, but it certainly gets a lot harder without Andrew Wiggins, and they're not beating the Suns or the Nuggets without Andrew Wiggins. So, again, all the best to him. Hope that he comes back from this all okay. Let's talk about another contender that has given some concern as of late out west. The Nuggets, the second I leave the country, Jokic and the boys decide that they can't keep it together anymore. They lost four straight. They're now only up, what, four games on the Grizzlies, whereas previously it was more like 8-9. 3.5, they're up. They've won a couple in a row now, but how concerned should we be about them?
There's a moderate level of concern here with Denver. The biggest concern, I'd say, is defensively we've seen this team come back to earth, right?
Yes.
They're 9-6 over their last 15. Offensively, they still get buckets. They're top 10 in offensive rating. But this is a team that was hustling, was playing hard, that could supplement Jokic, you know, at the five where you weren't getting beat too bad. They're 22nd in defensive rating with, I think, 116.1 over these last 15 games. That's not going to fly. And there's a couple other things that I think are going to need to go right for Denver. I think they're going to have to obviously reach a higher defensive ceiling than that come playoff time. We'll see if that's possible because, again, my biggest criticism of the Nuggets in the past, a lot of people's biggest criticisms of the Nuggets in the past was you got Jokic at the five spot. That's a negative. It's hard to win a title when you don't have a good defensive big anchoring you in the paint like that. You can supplement it. I think they have to be league average defensively because we've known that. There is a ceiling when you have Jokic. There is a defensive ceiling that you can't surpass when you have Jokic at your five spot. That being said, you can supplement that in other ways. That's by being great offensively. So Jamal Murray is going to have to play like an utter superstar come playoff time. He hasn't been horrible these past 15. He's putting up 20 and 7 on 42-40, 79 splits basically. Hadn't really been on him. I do think we need to see less Reggie Jackson minutes off the bench.
Yes.
I mean, don't even, like, why even send him out there, man? I think Nuggets fans are probably missing Bones Highland right now. He has looked good in the limited minutes that he's gotten for L.A. Just point blank, Reggie Jackson should not be out there. He stinks. But, again, you can supplement this in other ways. You need Jamal Murray to be a superstar. You need MPJ to knock down shots. You need the other glue guys to do their jobs. You need to make a lot of threes. That was an issue during their four-game losing streak, too. You know, they go 6-25 against Toronto. A night later, they do beat Detroit, but they go 8-24 from deep. This has to be one of the best three-point shooting teams in the playoffs to get through. And this is the one edge that I will give Denver, right? Everybody's so quick to hop off Denver, I think, because it's unpopular. Because we've seen Denver not make it through in the past. because I think people have a personal bias against Nikola Jokic because he's won two MVPs and they're kind of tired of the talk about the Nuggets and how great he is and how great the Nuggets are. But there's one edge that I will give Denver over other teams in the West that I think is very, very important. They've been doing it consistently, and they have a continuity aspect that the other teams just do not. While it's very hard to win a title when you don't have a great defense, that is the precedent that has been set over, you look at however many years, the Raptors, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Dubs, all great defenses. So that precedent is hard to overcome when you don't have a great defense. Another precedent that is hard to overcome is when you don't have guys playing full years and coming together. The Nets super team, the Sixers. Mm-hmm. That's why I'd give them an edge maybe over teams like LA, teams like Phoenix. The Denver Nuggets have played together all year long, and they have an identity, and they know how to play together. That's the one edge that I would give Denver. It's hard to come together with a new roster, with a new group, in a very short period of time, come together and play championship-level basketball. We have seen a portion of this season where the Nuggets were number one offensive rating, they were number 12 in defensive rating, and they were playing championship-level basketball. That's something that a lot of these other new teams we haven't seen yet, right? The Suns are going to have basically seven games to get ready for the playoffs. They're basically going to have one full series to get ready for the playoffs. That's hard. The Lakers have had maybe, what, four or five games at full health? Maybe less than that. That's the one edge I would still give Denver over Western Conference contenders, but it's still concerning, right? There's not a concrete home run pick at all in the West. All of these teams are very flawed and have their own red flags, but I would still say I think the red flags for Denver are less than that of other teams. They have the continuity. They have the consistency. That don't take that as I'm not worried. I'm worried. Don't get me wrong, but they have the continuity and the consistency, and it's hard for new teams to come together and just win a title like that. And so that's the one edge I would still give Denver, and I think that if MPJ and Jamal play like I know they can, if this team is shooting well and they can get to league average defensively, I can still see a world in which this team comes out of the West.
Logan, I almost can't even put into words how much I love everything that you just said. You really hit on, to me, all the key points. We'll start with what you ended on, which is that it would be unprecedented to see a team like Phoenix win the title. The biggest midseason trade that we've ever seen swing the title race would have to be Clyde going to the Rockets. Mm-hmm. And they had 35 games together. And they weren't a good regular season team anyways, which is weird. But they were able to get it gelling at the right time and capitalize. Other than that, like, you have, again, some of those needle-moving, like Gasol, like Rasheed Wallace, but those are happening where you have at least passed the deadline, or, you know, the trades are happening before the deadline, right? So you have at least 20-something games to get things together, and they aren't a fundamental star pieces of a Kevin Durant level or the Lakers, like, rehauling their entire supporting cast. Although the supporting cast has been out there consistently, it's just LeBron and at times AD who have struggled to be out there consistently. So I do think that's an important point. There is no superstar in my mind who can fit in more easily to any basketball situation than Kevin Durant because of his offensive versatility, because of what he can do as a pick-and-roll ball handler or as a catch-and-shooter, and because of how he fits in defensively as that secondary rim protector. He's just a selfless, versatile guy who can really fit in any basketball situation and make them better. I mean, he joined a 73-win team as a consistent 28-30-point-per-game scorer, and he fit in, and he made them that much better. So I don't really know how to weight that concern. I do think right now I would lean Phoenix, and I would lean Phoenix because the margin between them and Denver for me, and it's largely a theoretical proposition for Phoenix because we've only seen three games of KD with them, but had been razor thin. They made the move. I said, I think I lean Phoenix. And then I thought, maybe I lean Denver because of the continuity. But with Denver's defensive regression, as you mentioned, I think it's too much of a concern. I can just envision it now. All right, let's target Jamal and Jokic pick and roll. Let's target MPJ and Jokic pick and roll. And with the proficiency of ball handling and shot making and playmaking they have with KD and Book, who has been playing out of his mind, and CP3, who I do still think can step up in those big moments, playoff situations, and murder you out of the pick and roll. It's just a little too scary. I was like, they have to be able to hang on. They have to be able to play like a fringe top 10 defense at the very least. And they've let go of the reins a bit there. And I get that it's like, for them, sort of let go of the reins time of the year, because they pretty much had the one seed locked up. Jokic played some games where defensively his effort was minimal, and that certainly hurt them quite a bit. But bottom line, the top-end talent of Phoenix is just very tough to deny. I still think that Denver is one of the top two teams out west. LA could work their way into that conversation. Right now, we got to see them get into the playoffs. We got to see LeBron get back. We got to see AD be consistently great, which he has not done. And so Denver still has the utmost respect for me, but I just think if Torrey Craig and Josh Okogie play well, and I think we've seen them handle their minutes pretty well, Okogie's come down to earth a bit from the shooting stretch that he was on, which made him really a different basketball player. Like, Josh Okogie was really damn good for a few weeks there. But still, I think it's enough. And I agree with you. Denver needs to sharpen up the rotation. I don't like the Reggie Jackson minutes. And I think that that should be Christian Brown. I think that I would rather have the shooting, the athleticism, the consistent effort from him, the lack of an ego. I mean, he's a guy who believes in himself, but he doesn't force himself on the game like Reggie Jackson can. And I just think it's more important, like, I felt that they need that really competent bench creator, and now I'm starting to think maybe just it's better to have a more capable all-around sort of wing presence and just let Jokic or Murray be the guy running it with these second units. It's always Murray. It could be Jokic. I think that's something worth trying in the playoffs for those 8-10-minute stretches. I think that would elevate their offense more, just because Jokic is more of a singular elevator of offenses. Like, if you're going to put either one of them with inferior talent, say we expect results, I think Jokic would do a better job. But yeah, I'm not loving the Reggie Jackson minutes. I think there needs to be a flexibility there where if he's playing poorly, he gets pulled. So it's coming down to it. I just look at Denver and I think there's more of a fatal flaw there with the defense. Phoenix's fatal flaw right now is just that we haven't seen it. Again, I don't love the depth, but I think it's enough if everybody out of their big four is playing up to their potential.
I think Denver does have a fatal flaw, and it is that defense. The fatal flaw, I would say, for LA, and again, LA, we're still working theoretical because, like you said, they have to get there. Phoenix, it's health. I mean, it's health, right? Like, I think that's got to be a red flag, too. And again, it's not something that I can tangibly calculate, but that has to be a concern too for both of these teams. LeBron struggling to stay on the floor, literally coming back from a 6-month to year-long injury in 6 weeks. One, that's remarkable. LeBron is Superman. Two, that has to be you have to be cautious there, because again, he's returning from such a major injury in such a short period of time. But then KD again has struggled to stay on the floor too. I don't want to get too much into injuries, but depth and injury, I don't know, man. At this point, I don't like betting on Carson Berber Classic here. I don't like betting on theoretical principles. Yeah. I don't like betting on theoretical basketball teams and not having seen it yet from Phoenix. We saw it for 3 games. Man, dude.
And I will say the precedent is tricky, because you think about the teams where it's been like, oh, they're going to pull it together. Maybe the Lakers in 2021 did not pull it together at all. They lost in the first round, and they had some injury stuff. But, right? The Sixers last year, again, they also had some injury stuff. That's the other thing. It's tough to think about these examples. The Nets getting it together midseason with Harden. They had injury stuff. That's really what undid them. But the reality is also that the two teams that we're talking about that we haven't seen put it together have injury stuff. KD has been hurt a lot over the last 4 years, from tearing his Achilles to the 3 subsequent seasons, he has missed a whole lot of basketball. Chris Paul has been a guy whose body is often broken down at the end of the season. AD is street clothes. LeBron has had some of his biggest injury issues. So it could end up being, again this year, a steadiest, healthiest man win situation. And that I would absolutely favor Denver. But it's tough to pick a team based on that because you kind of have to think best case scenario, Phoenix to me has the highest peak.
I think I will respectfully disagree because of depth and because of continuity, and I will give the slight edge to Denver.
I love it, and I hope that it happens. It would be really fun. But I would also like to see KD in the finals, and I would love to see Book in the finals. I love him as a basketball player. He's been annoying me as a person a bit recently. I don't know. He thinks that there's puppet masters controlling the operations because the Suns don't like to attack the bucket. 30th in restricted area field goal attempts, 28th in free throws. Lakers are one of the most physical downhill teams out there. They draw a ton of fouls. Phoenix, you guys are the fourth most foul-prone team in the league, but no, I'm sure that it's the Puppeteers. Four of their last six games, the Suns have been outshot by more than a dozen free throws. The refs are rigging every game, Logan. They're rigging every game. And the league is ignoring. They're rigging regular season games against the Suns. And the league is ignoring this.
That's got to be it. You know, you saw Luka the other night, man. Maybe Book should give him a little money symbol, too.
Luka is getting screwed by the refs. Trae Young says that there needs to be recourse for these guys. And I agree. I agree. Because I think that nobody has been treated more poorly by refs over the last half decade in the NBA than Trae Young. The whistle he gets is criminal. And I would like to see an investigation.
Hey, if they want to take it into their own hands, you got to go the Freddie V route and reach into your own pockets, man. That's the only one that we've seen actually work, and it was because Freddie had the cojones to go out and actually call a ref out in the media. That being said, Freddie actually was justified.
Also, it apparently didn't work. The NBA referee's Twitter account said that they didn't demote Ben Taylor. The schedule had been set already. Bad reporting by Tom Haberstroh, it would seem. I'm just so tired of the ragging on refs angle, dude. I mean, it was such a main story in the football season. Now it's a main story in the basketball season. It's just like, guys, the refs aren't responsible for every outcome. This is another thing I included in my tweet. The Warriors won the title last year being 26 in free throw attempts because they're a pull-up jump shooting team like the Phoenix Suns are a pull-up jump shooting team. They do not have to win the free throw differential to win games. So stop talking about it. Monty Williams, buddy, you're a good guy, but it's annoying as hell. He did it in the 2021 finals. Yeah, no shit, Giannis draws 15 free throws a game. He's a downhill wrecking ball, and you guys can't guard him without fouling. Shocker. Gee willikers, what happened there? Just lazy, man. And everybody hates refs, so they will always be a target, and some portion of the population will be like, yeah. Especially your fan base. Are you kidding me? If you guys blame the refs, everybody's going to love that. We saw it with Warriors fans on Twitter and Steph, and they're like, showing the highest scoring guys in the NBA and then their free throw attempts per game. And they're like the most disrespected star in NBA history. I looked it up. Where do you think Steph ranks in the league in restricted area field goal attempts per game?
Among like any qualifiers?
Yeah, I didn't set limits, but I think they were only showing qualified guys.
I mean, I'd probably say he's outside of the top 100, yeah?
He's 120th between Precious Achiuwa and Willie Hernan Gomez. Geez, I wonder why he doesn't shoot 12 free throws a game. And I don't think Steph gets the best whistle, but it's just
that's never been Steph's game, man.
It's drivel. It's ridiculous, and guys. Be smarter, be better. The refs are not always plotting against you.
I mean, the one thing that I'll say about that, and it has nothing to do, refs do not singularly impact the outcome of basketball games. They don't. They never have. They never will be in any sports game.
Well, the 2002 Western Conference Finals.
I was going to say, maybe you can say the 2002 Western Conference Finals because of Mr. David Stern. He didn't want to see the Nets-Kings Finals. We all did. Unfortunately, we didn't get it. The one thing I will say, and this has been, I hear a complaint from non-NBA fans who are basketball fans, and that's anytime anybody gets touched, you know, they blow the whistle. I don't like it either, right? Like, it does seem like that a lot of times. I can't remember who it was the other night. I think it was Markelle Fultz. Somebody was driving to the rim, and I think Fultz had his back turned or something like that, and they ended up calling a foul. And it's like, I would like to see, on the broader scale of basketball as a whole and the NBA, for refs to let these guys play a little more. I think the players 100%. Would be happier. I think the fans would be happier. I think everybody would be happier. But it's like, I mean, I'm a fan. I'm not going to – we have – you know, I'm not in a ref's ear right now. I can't say that to him. We'd all like to see them – let them play a little more. But we don't.
Yeah.
That's not our call.
Who are Trae Young and Luka Doncic to complain about that? Who benefits more from manipulating the refs? Trae Young in that game, before which he complained, he shot 16 free throws. That was as many shots as he took. And, I mean, a vast majority of it was from non-basketball moves, from just trying to draw that little bit of body contact on illegitimate shot attempts, just throwing shit up, flailing, making it look like a foul however he could. I hate that. Free throws are up around the league this year by about, I think, like 10% compared to last year. And, yeah, it's the highest it's been in over a decade, which is not good. It's not a good trend. Nobody likes it. And the NBA was supposed to get better about this, and it hasn't. And I'll just say, with the level of offensive skill that exists in the NBA today, offensive players don't need additional bullshit rules in their favor, because that is not only leading to an unfair balance of power between offense versus defense, between stars versus your regular Joes. It's bad product. Nobody wants to watch guys foul bait. It sucks. Anyways, that was on my mind. I talked about that stuff with Jason Timpf over on Hoops Tonight, too. You guys should check that out on the Volume YouTube. But it's just a very frustrating thing that is persistently mentioned this year, man. Refs, refs, refs. I know we talked about the refs after the Super Bowl. We actually both didn't like that call, but it's not every regular season game, guys. Come on. What are we doing? Okay, last thing we'll touch on quickly here. There is a mad race for the play-in, for the playoffs out west. We have four teams currently tied for the 8 seed. The 7 seed is right there, as is the 6 seed. So, Logan, which two teams do you think get through the play-in and into the actual playoffs out of this pack?
Man, it's tough. At this point, I think I'd say the Lakers. The Lakers are my first pick. They've been number one in defensive rating, actually, over these last 15 games, ahead of a team like the Milwaukee Bucks. Offensively, they're about middle of the pack, about 20th in the league, but I still like what I've seen out of L.A. I mean, these glue guys playing good basketball, Austin Reeves playing his ass off, 17-5-3. Over the last 15 for Reeves on like 58, 42, 84 splits. He has a true shooting percentage of like 74 over these last 15 games, man. It's stupid. But I've really liked what we've seen defensively, man, and it just seems like they flipped a switch. It's really nice to see, dude, from a team that was so disengaged earlier on in the season to seeing a team playing hard with a lot of heart. You know, that was what I feel like we've missed from L.A., a team with heart, man, and we've seen it recently, playing hard on the defensive end, and everything's come together after that. You know, guys haven't been shooting exceptionally well, but they've been doing enough to get through games, and they play physical, they play hard, they protect the paint, and they get downhill, and they get to the paint. Anthony Davis has been pretty good over these last 13. He's missed two games. 26-13-3, 57% from the floor. You'd like to see AD shoot a little better, but that's marginal. And I just think among these other teams out west, they've got the defensive edge, they're hitting their stride at the right time, and I like their talent a little more. And then it's kind of a crapshoot for me, dude. I don't like Dallas. I don't like Dallas. And I think that as we continue watching Dallas, I like the Kyrie trade less and less, and I continue to move more towards, man, I wish that they had just built more 3-and-D guys around Luka, because Luka is such a good singular force. We've talked about the Mavs trade a lot, and I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, but it's like, I understand it. You want to take some of the pressure off of Luka. You want to alleviate some of the pressure by giving him another ball handler. You want to save his stamina and stuff for the regular season and for the playoffs, but he's such a singularly dominant force. It's frustrating when on the other end they go get a bucket, and they just immediately give it up because their personnel is so horrendous, man. Mm-hmm. They just need guys who play defense, and that's what scares me about Dallas. That's why at this point, man, I feel like I'm closer to leaning towards a Minnesota, a Utah, a Oklahoma City. I mean that. Like, is Dallas even going to make it into the play-in? Utah plays hard every night and frustrates teams. Oklahoma City plays hard every night and frustrates teams. Mm-hmm. Minnesota has maybe Cat and Anthony Edwards coming back through a long-rangey team with two superstars potentially on the floor. So I'll tell you two things for certain. I'm in on L.A., on the Lakers making it through, and I'm out on Dallas. I don't know who the other team I'm picking is, but I'm leaning towards Minnesota, Oklahoma City, or Utah. I'm also out on New Orleans without Zion. They've just shown me a little too much. right now, I would say tentatively Minnesota and Los Angeles are my most likely two to make it through. They're physical teams. They play hard. And Dallas just has way too many flaws.
I think I agree. I definitely am with you on LA. Again, we don't know exactly when LeBron is coming back. That is scary, but with the level that Austin Reeves has been playing at, D'Lo has been playing some very good basketball recently. AD has mostly looked quite good. The team defense and the fact that they have a lot of winnable games down the stretch here, I think that they probably get in. And if they get in, then LeBron will be there, and I think that they get through. Oklahoma City, I love them, dude. I mean, I love Jalen Williams. I love Shea, and I love how hard they play. And they do have an easy schedule. I still think there's just a talent deficit there. They could get in. They could frustrate people. They'll be in the play-in, I definitely think, but I don't know that they're getting through the play-in. I think Minnesota or Dallas is a tough one, dude, because Dallas has a lot of winnable games here to try to snag that 8 seed. And if you get the 8 seed, you just have to win one game instead of two, so it's a noticeable difference. They play San Antonio, Charlotte twice, Indiana, Chicago, Atlanta. It's a lot of winnable games. Minnesota also has a pretty easy schedule, but not quite that easy in teams that are playing for more, like New Orleans, LA, Golden State, trying to secure their spots in the standings. But Dallas has just been so bad defensively. They're 26th in defensive rating over their last 15, which is right about where they've been on the year overall. Minnesota, Ant should be coming back very soon. Cat is now back. They feel motivated. I'm very conflicted between the two of them. If it came down to one game between Minnesota and Dallas, who would I take? I think I would take Dallas. I think I would, because I think the faith level that I have in Luka and Kyrie in tandem is too great. But I don't know. I mean, they can't stop anybody, so they're not doing anything of significance. It's going to be a crazy race, though, man. Like I said, four-way tie for the 8 seed. That means a team that is currently tied for 8 isn't even going to be in the play-in. And as you mentioned, Utah is only half a game out, and they're the 12 seed. It's going to be crazy. I think Dallas still gets in. I would not be surprised at all if it's Minnesota. But Luka, man, when it comes to do-or-die moments, he tends to just pull out an unbelievable level. And I do believe that he's capable of that again.
Well, if Dallas does get in, it's going to be fun watching them get, you know, four-piece in the playoffs. Actually, I say
I don't know, dude. Against the Nuggets, they could win a game or two.
Against Denver, honestly,
it's a lot of offense.
And I don't know why people are hopping on Memphis now. I've seen people like thinking that Memphis is going to get out of the West or something like that, and I just think that's really egregious and stupid.
Yeah.
Like, the team didn't win the majority. You know, they won all kinds of games without Ja last season. Why are we surprised that they're doing it again? I'm out on Memphis, too. Like, I could see... Actually, man, as I say that, I think that's a dumb take. I think both of those series are going to be actually mad competitive, but I would pick Dallas to lose. I don't think they make it there. Honestly, dude, in a one game off between Dallas and Minnesota, I love Luka. He's so much fun to watch. He's maybe like my... He's just insane, but I still think I'd take Minnesota, man. Defense matters, and I've never seen the Dallas Mavericks play defense.
Minnesota! All right. I dig it. I would like to see it, because I do like Kat and Ant. I know that everybody hates Kat, which is a bit cold, given that he's been through some very public personal trauma, mm-hmm. and he's such a talented basketball player, but people think he's soft, I guess, and that's all that matters. Even though I remember when the story came out about how impressed KG was with him, KG, the hardest guy out who everybody respects and loves. People are unfair, Logan. People are unfair, especially at times, sports fans. But hey, what are you going to do? We love it. We love it. We live for it. So appreciate you guys as always. That's going to do it for us today. If you want more Nerd Sesh, check out our TikTok, of course. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram. Twitter is at @nerd_sesh. Instagram is at @nerdsesh. And we're here, baby. We're in the home stretch of the regular season. This is when things are getting intense. People are really playing for seeding now. Like, rosters are taking shape more. Teams are getting into that playoff form. It's a very fun time of the year, and we are headed into one of the most interesting postseasons that I can recall. So we'll be back with a couple more shows next week. We're going to be consistently coming at you guys with content out the wazoo. So stay tuned for all that. And with that, as always, appreciate you guys. I've been Carson Brabber.
I've been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.